Welcome to Talking Transfers from the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by 90 Min's transfer correspondent, Graham Bailey, and 90 Min UK editor and writer, Sean Walsh, who is also part of the Oh What A Night podcast, talking all about Tottenham Hotspur, who had a great start to the Premier League season. So I'm sure, Sean, you're very happy today. But please subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and follow us on Twitter at underscore Scott Saunders, at Graham Bailey, and at Sean DZ Walsh. I'm harping back to last week. DZ, danger zone, all that kind of stuff. Sean, how are you doing today? You must have had a nice start to the Premier League season watching Spurs.
Yeah, it threatened to go awry about 10, 15 minutes in. Went behind to James Ward-Prowse, really great open play goal. But from then on in, we were so professional and cutthroat with everything we did. It was really what Spurs' Conte was about at the back end of last season. It was nice to see that continuity come into this season. And he made a big point after the match that he purposely didn't start any of the new six signings because he wanted that kind of continuity. So yeah, really happy right now. I'm in a good place.
Tell us about the pod. How regularly are you and Jude chatting about Spurs at the moment?
Yeah, season started up again, so we're planning to do at least once a week. We recorded our review of the Southampton game yesterday, plus a mini Chelsea preview this week, which is always interesting. We have a terrible record at Stamford Bridge. I think it's one win in about 30-something years. It's the fixture that always kind of, I don't ever expect anything from. You would logically think that this time we might get something, but you never know.
You never know. Graham, how's Middlesbrough going?
Interesting. Yeah, we had a bad start on Saturday, 3-0 down, but then we almost made a miraculous comeback. Marcus Fowler's got off the score sheet. It's good to see. So I know we're a work in progress. You know, we could have done, we were one of these teams who, like a number of the Premier League teams, like your own United's got, where we could have done with the season starting as normal time rather than a bit early this year. But confident by the end of the month, we'll have all the players we want. Matthew Hoppe on his way, American international. So yeah, two tough games out, and we've got Sheffield United on Sunday, so it doesn't stop there. So, but yeah, pretty confident we'll be in a good place at the end of the month.
I'm somewhat surprised Man United aren't going for Matthew Hoppe with the standard of targets they're trying to sign at the moment.
I heard you did, but he turned you down.
Probably did. Man United will talk all about the circus at the start of the show. Adrian Rabiot, Marko Arnautović, Cody Gakpo, any player who's ever played in the Eredivisie by the seams of it. We'll talk about Man United's crisis because it just is. They lost at home to Brighton. I know Sean finds it quite amusing. I'm finding it quite...
Can we mention Man United bet, Scott, which is currently winning?
It is currently winning. I'll give you that one, Graham. Newcastle were okay the other day. Forest. You went to that game, didn't you? Forest, that's a bit disappointed with Forest.
Yeah, I covered the game. It was a strange one. Newcastle... in my rating to see, there wasn't a single player over seven, but they didn't need to be. Forest were really, really bad. And Newcastle, you know, Bruno didn't get a first gear, but again, he didn't need to. Him and Joe Linton dominated the midfield, really. Newcastle still lacking up front, but yeah, Callum Wilson, when he's fit, as we know from your fantasy pick, Scott, he's a good player. And it was a great finish, to be fair. But yeah, Forest need more in the last third and going forward. They didn't trouble Newcastle at all.
Yeah, we'll talk about Newcastle in a little bit on two transfer targets, Bamba Dieng and Lucas Paqueta. I'll come back to you on that, Graham. We'll also talk Bernardo Silva, Spurs transfer targets with Sean, Wesley Fofana, the latest on him, Denzel Dumfries, who seems to be a regular fixture in this podcast at the moment, Mikel Damsgaard to Brentford, some Wilf Zaha and Callum Hudson-Odoi chat, Conor Gallagher, ins and outs at Wolves and Everton, and Fulham closing in on Justin Kluivert, as well as a circle or like a merry-go-round of midfielders across Europe that could involve the likes of Adrian Rabiot, Frankie de Jong, who we can't go a show without mentioning. I can't wait for the transfer window to be over soon so we know exactly what's happening with him because I'm sick to death of it. But let's revert to Man United to start with because we have posted on 90min.com on Tuesday today of interest from Man United in Adrian Rabiot and Marko Arnautović. And now Cody Gakpo as well. There seems to be interest from United there. Erik ten Hag is pushing these signings by the looks of it, having seen just how bad Man United are at football on the pitch at Old Trafford on Sunday. Sean, I'll come to you in a second, but Graham, what's the latest on these deals?
Yeah, they are progressing with Rabiot and Arnautović, both ongoing. and United expect them both to happen. We know Rabiot, you know, P. Scott, that his mother might even be waiting to see how Monaco do. They like him, but they're in Champions League contention, although it looks like they might not get through against PSV. So, yeah, and United are insisting these two are not instead of deals. They're not, you know, it's not Arnautovic instead of Anthony. It's not Rabiot instead of De Jong. They're saying these are deals, almost backup deals. These are ones they've always wanted or had in mind. Whether we believe in them in that context, I'm not so sure. But yeah, as we saw from the weekend, maybe more bodies the better. Are these two good enough to improve United squad? Probably you can tell us more, Scott. But yeah, two interesting pickups. Obviously, and Rabiot, we know is coming from Juve. And Arnautovic is interesting because he has worked with both Ten Hag and Steve McClaren during their time at Twente. So they both do know what they're getting with him.
But do they, though? This was 12 years ago.
They know what they're getting. They'll know what they're getting with him as a player.
Off the field. A handful. Abrasive. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great description, actually, for him as a handful on the pitch and off the pitch, from what we understand.
He's a nightmare to play against. I've seen plenty of teams play against Marko Arnautovic and him making an impression. 6'4", big lad. Good ball control, really. Scored a few goals in Serie A last season.
West Ham will tell you he's a nightmare off the pitch as well, Scott.
I know, yeah. It's been publicised very well. There's questions about his character, which obviously are there for all to see if you look at social media. I think the big thing here is Jude Summerfield, who is your co-host, Sean, on the Oh What a Night pod, did a tweet on Monday, which has got like 50,000 likes, which is like crazy. Adrian Rabiot will be a statement signing from Man United if that statement is... we have no idea what we're doing, because it just really does seem, again, like Man United have gone from this position of, oh, okay, we're chill, we're going for Frankie de Jong, we're confident we'll get him, it's fine, we still think we might, we're going to wait. But oh, wait, we just lost to Brighton, and now, oh, god damn, these players are bad, we need to
supplement them. You seem angrier at the Rabiot one, Scott, than you are and out of it, is that fair to say?
No, I think it's both, really. I think it is both. The defeat was awful. Don't get me wrong, the defeat was awful, but I think the thing that does bother me is United have made a big song and dance about new start, new manager, new people in charge at the top. John Murta, his first real summer in charge to get it right. Richard Arnold has taken over from Ed Woodward, who was a disaster in charge of Man United over the last few years. And it seems like they're falling back and making the same mistakes they've been making for the entire time, for the entire last 10 or 12 years. Sean, what do you make of it all watching on?
I won't lie, it is a bit funny from this point of view. Don't envy your position at all. I was going to actually refer to a tweet from your co-host on the Promised Land podcast, Scott. Rob Blanchett tweeted how, you know, you went into the season full of optimism on Sunday morning, you know, fresh start under Ten Hag, all of these kind of the two or three new players you did have, it's going to be different this time. Obviously, you put in the performance you did, you lose to Brighton, and then within the next 24 hours, you're linked with Arnautovic and Rabiot. I can't imagine... could you imagine going into the weekend thinking that way? There was another tweet I saw from someone else where they said, if you'd asked me what club was going to get linked to Arnautovic and Rabiot, it was going to be someone like Hellas Verona.
I thought that was generous, didn't you, Sean? I thought I was thinking maybe Fulham, Southampton, that sort of area.
Yeah.
Southampton, yeah, just Fulham. Fulham's a good one. Fulham does make sense. But these are just generally really weird moves.
I was just surprised you weren't linked after Danny Welbeck on Monday morning, to be honest.
He'd be a better option than Marko Arnautovic.
I said, and I did remember, I did say that on the pod towards the end of last year. His performance I saw for him at Elland Road, so that's the best performance I've ever seen from Danny Welbeck. He's in such good form at the minute, but hey, that's no excuse to...
He was a real pain for United on Sunday.
Lissandro, yeah. Does it worry you, Scott, that Lissandro gets a run around off Welbeck that doesn't bode well for the future?
I it took me 25 minutes watching that game and I thought Lissandro Martinez is a defensive midfielder.
Ivan Tony next up.
Well, that's what Arsenal indeed though, Scott, you make the point, and when we had Harry on previously, that's what Arsenal were looking at him. They were looking at Jack of all trades, but Jack starting off in the midfield, they didn't see him as starting as a centre half. They saw him what Zinchenko does now, maybe left back, defensive midfield, and as an emergency at the back. But yeah, I can't imagine what Rafael Varane was thinking watching that, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, he's not been completely up to date with his fitness. He's not 100% there, but I mean, if you're opting for Harry Maguire and Lisandro Martinez ahead of a World Cup winning four-time Champions League winning defender, who
imagine he must have got actually, on thinking about retirement, right? He must have got on and thought, if I can't get ahead of them two, I've got to seriously think about my future.
Yeah, but Lisandro Martinez, I think he seems to be a defensive midfielder. It turns out that Christian Eriksen, Sean, you've seen plenty of Christian Eriksen, is the number six that United have decided to go with, having seen that Fred can't do it.
I've been telling you this, you're going to like this guy, because no matter what he does, if he's playing in midfield and not as a number nine as he started with, he will create chances. He will spread the ball just so effortlessly. It's a real joy to watch, and I think that's going to be really important for United in the next few weeks, because as I alluded to, you've got Brentford next, who have started quite well. After that is Liverpool. There is a universe where Man United have 0 points from the opening three games, but it's about how do you get to the end of the transfer window without kind of losing your marbles even more so.
Well, my season last year was apathy. Now it's anger completely. but Graham, we touched on Adrian Rabiot. Obviously, you've given a summary there of where United stand on these deals. As it stands, we expect them to go through Rabiot and Arnautovic. Why are Man United chasing a player that Juventus would be willing to pay off? And why have Man United allowed Paul Pogba to go for free to Juventus to replace Adrian Rabiot and then paid for Adrian Rabiot? This is crazy.
Yeah, there's a section where our colleague Jack would be loving to come on the pod and just see him having a party, because Juventus getting Artur is on his way to Valencia as well. Juventus getting rid of two players they've been working weeks and weeks upon to get rid of without any sniffs. And obviously Artur's going to Valencia on a free loan. Manchester United are paying money for this player who might have been paid up at the end of this month. He wouldn't have been able to get on the bench. He wasn't in Allegri's plans to an extent where they probably wouldn't put him on the bench. He was that far out of the equation. Yeah, and I say you're rubbing it in, Scott, when it's a fact they took Pogba for free and you're paying them for Rabiot. It's such a strange situation United are in. We were Gary Neville was condemning or attacking Todd Boehly for his approach. Wow. You know, Todd Boehly is Man City, Real Madrid rolled into one at the minute compared to what United are doing.
Very true. Very true. crazy. But you mentioned there Artur on his way to Valencia. I was going to do this at the end of the show, but I think it's a good moment to maybe bring it in. There's a bit of a merry-go-round involving a lot of central midfielders across Europe. Hey, Frankie de Jong. You can see why Man United want Frankie de Jong, because I think he has the qualities to play that sixth position that Erik ten Hag seems to want. He has those qualities that Fred completely doesn't have. I have different concerns about the distance between the number six and the number eights and how that's going to work defensively and this kind of thing over the next few months, if they get him. But obviously Chelsea want Frankie de Jong as well. And there's other players rolled into this. So Man United's interest in Fabian Ruiz it came out last week, but he's on the way to PSG. PSG have Leandro Paredes, who Juventus want. Chelsea are in for De Jong. Chelsea need to free up some space for Jorginho. Juventus potentially looking at bringing maybe more than one player in if they're getting Leandro Paredes and they've had Paul Pogba injured and there's Rabiot leaving, Aaron Ramsey's already left. Could they bring in two? Could they bring in Leandro Paredes and Jorginho? Adrian Rabiot could go out to Man United and Arthur goes to Valencia. So there's a bit of a merry-go-round here, Graham. Have I explained that well enough?
Yeah, you know, Fabian Ruiz, excellent player. PSG have stepped in. Him and Sanchez are both there, obviously. And Paredes is available. I'm not seeing a lot of United fans on social media wanting United to go for him. pardon me. That's an interesting Paredes, but I'd say that doesn't stop their interest in Jorginho, who they love. And as you say, Scott, the money Artur are going out, yeah, they're going to have to cover some of those wages. Rabiot's wages, who we're discussing before the pod, we were trying to work out, weren't we, where he may very well be the highest paid player in Serie A at the moment, Rabiot.
That's crazy.
It is. And you're paying, and there's money coming in for him. And so if they get rid of him and Aaron Ramsey, who was on a huge wage packet, Juventus have freed up so much money in the last 2 weeks that they could go and get Jorginho. And I think if Chelsea do press ahead with De Jong or if they beat United to him, they would have to let, I think, one of those high-paid midfielders go. And I think Jorginho is just more is easier to move on than Kante or Kovacic?
Oh, well, 3 weeks left of the transfer window. We will see how this all...
I love it's actually that thing of like, oh, there's no one available. And it's like you're thinking, oh, it's okay, there's no one available, Scott. And then you're seeing Ruiz going to PSG, Sanchez going to PSG, Paredes going to Juve. You think they're all so much better than the players we're going for.
And you also, so like, sad. Whether there was anything in this or not, I can't remember what we reported on this, Graham. But I know that Man United were linked with Moises Caicedo for a time before he joined Brighton. And that might have been a lot of agent noise. It might not have been, but there were definitely links there.
I think that was just the way Brighton do things and the appeal to a lot of players. That, to be honest, I don't think United were alone, but United did want him. But I think a lot, you can see now why so many teams wanted him. But the way Brighton have brought him on as Basuma's replacement has been fascinating. And he looks a real player, doesn't he?
Yeah, £4-5 million. You can see them see Brighton selling him for 50-odd million in a couple of years' time, possibly to Man United. We'll see how it goes. But let's move across Manchester to Manchester City. Latest on Bernardo Silva, Graham, amid interest from Barcelona.
Yeah, you know, Silva is making it known through his agents, through his representatives, that he would quite like to move to Barcelona. There's even reports in the Catalan press, and I probably believe these that there isn't an issue in personal terms have already been discussed. And, you know, that probably isn't the issue. The issue here is, can Barcelona prize him out of City? You know, with Gerestein and Soriano, this is the best run club in world football. You know, they do not want to let him go. I'm told that the City is standing firm. Pep's obviously spoken about it. He wants the players there. Pep's quotes didn't help the situation, you know, because he sounded a little bit, he'll do his best. You know, he was almost... But kept the door ajar, didn't he? He didn't slam it shut about his potential departure. But no, I fully expect Bernardo to stay. I just don't see how Barca could even contemplate doing that sort of deal. What would Silva, you know, what we're talking, 70, 80 million at least? One of the best midfielders in the Premier League on huge wages. When it comes to Barca, never say never. But, you know, City is standing firm and they do not want him to go.
That's the point I was going to make, Graham. Barcelona have managed to pull stuff off in this summer transfer window that nobody thought was possible. Sean, what do you think happens here? Because I think, obviously, there was suggestions Bernardo Silva wanted to join Barcelona last year and has wanted this move for a while. But Man City as well. I know Graham has just obviously mentioned that Man City don't want to sell him. But City have a history of letting players go if they want to. Leroy Sané wanted to go to Bayern, they let him go. Raheem Sterling. You know, they probably wanted to keep him. They offered him a new deal, I think, if I remember rightly. But he's gone to Chelsea. There's other players too. So how does City progress with this one, in your eyes?
Well, Graham mentioned it there, that, you know, Pep didn't necessarily kind of slam the door shut. I don't think that... Has there ever been a time where he slammed the door shut on a player potentially leaving? He's always been... It's like he's almost trying to convince the player, like, you know, if you want to leave, go, but you should be almost kind of privileged that you're able to even stay here at this kind of big club that wins all these trophies all the time. I would be personally shocked if he goes now, if there isn't a replacement lined up. But again, it's talk about one of the best run clubs in the world here. It wouldn't surprise me either if there was a deal just waiting out there for them to conclude. You know, is City potentially looking at Frankie de Jong maybe, if that's later in the window and nothing's really moved there. I remember when they got Ruben Diaz, that wasn't until the last few days of the transfer window either. And there was kind of little to suggest that they were going to move for him earlier in that window either. So
there was,
who knows?
There was a suggestion over the weekend via social media, which put Marco Verratti, Frankie de Jong and Bernardo Silva in a merry-go-round of transfers. Another merry-go-round.
Oh, Marco Verratti, I'd love to see him. Two of my favourite players being on the same team, him and Foden. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see Verratti in England. I think it's amazing. He doesn't really get mentioned very often. He's obviously... Yeah,
he's the injury record?
Coming up for 10 years, I think, in PSG.
Yeah. I remember when they signed him. He was a good few years ago. He was... highly rated player. I was surprised he went to PSG, but he's had a great career, won the Euros, obviously, won plenty of stuff with PSG over the last few years. But the injury record, I think, has been the thing that stopped clubs in the past. And Graham, obviously, you believe that Bernardo Silva will stay because you picked him in the 90-min FPL draft last week.
Yeah, City sources are very strong on this, you know. And actually, if we think back to last summer, as Sean said, Silva did want to leave because he didn't think he was in contention at the start. And then suddenly this new sort of deeper role emerged for him at City. And so, yeah, it's a really, really interesting situation. But I don't see him going this summer. I think it's more those, Scott. I think they will let him go, but just in 12 months. Like it was, Sané was went on for ages, didn't it, if you remember, to Bayern. So I think it's one where Silva really wants to go, they'll let him go next summer. But I think he'll understand it. They've lost Zinchenko. Jesus has gone. Been a real revolution almost in the City squad by their standards. So I think they will let him go in 12 months if he still wants to go.
Let's move to top of the Premier League, Tottenham, after a 4-1 win over Southampton. Sean, latest on potential incomings at Spurs. We've reported on Zaniolo over the past few weeks. I think you've done a recent update on that story and a potential new signing from Udinese, is it?
Yes, from Udinese, yeah. So we'll start with that. We'll start with Destiny Adoji, 19-year-old left wing back, set to sign for around 25 million euros and be loaned back to Udinese. Graham and I understand that Brighton were also in for him, but couldn't quite make it work. And Spurs' willingness to send him back to Udinese for another year helped in that sense. I think that's good as well, because I don't think that if he comes into the team now, he's going to play too much, because Sessegnon got a goal at the weekend. He ended last season really strongly. He seems to be one of Conte's better success stories in terms of the individuals. Perisic has come in and Spurs fans are just so excited to see what he can do in this Conte team as well. I know I am. But it does seem that as if this is a deal for the long term and for Conte in the long term, that this is his kind of goal scoring output wing back. I think he got 5 goals, 4 assists last season in his first full season for Udinese in Serie A, which is quite ludicrous for a wing back. That's a lot. And there were reports recently that Daniel Levy is having to do all he can to prove to Conte that he should stick around the long term. So this, for me, is one of those deals that's like, okay, we're serious about you. Here is a perfect wing back in your mould. So in a couple of years, maybe even from next year onwards, if you're looking to phase Perisic out, we've got a ready-made replacement. So that's really promising. And then, yeah, Nicolò Zaniolo, been going on for a while, this one. Spurs had a loan with obligation to buy bid, knocked back by Roma, who weren't happy that Spurs is... the numbers in the bid were about 25 million euros up front plus 10 in add-ons. They're looking for at least 50. And so I can completely understand why Roma are not happy about that.
Plenty going on at Spurs. They've had a good summer. And
it points to where they are, don't you think, guys? It points to where Spurs are, where we see United scrambling around for first teamers. It's got to point now where Spurs are looking to the future buying. They're in the Liverpool Man City mold almost. Spurs are the progression is there on and off the pitch now. It really is, isn't it? Where snap up one of Europe's, you see, we have the most talented wing backs for the future. As a Spurs fan, Sean, that must be it's really pleasing. It tells you there's not many bits of the jigsaw left for Conte to put in place. He must think that as well.
Yeah, and I think that was quite evident with, as I mentioned, about the starting lineup at the weekend, where he wanted the continuity still. We talked last week about what would we ask to really need to add to the squad. I would like some creativity, maybe it's even not from a starting position, but from the bench. But apart from that, yeah, you're right. We seem like we're good to go for the season, quite settled. There's a lot of positive noises around the club. I don't think there's much negativity. I think the real negativity has been that we haven't been able to shift the likes of Tongi and Ndombele and Giovanni Lo Celso yet, who have kind of been banished from first team.
They're both linked to maybe some good news on that front. Villarreal, we're talking
about Lo Celso
and Ndombele. Man, yeah. that'd be some deal, wouldn't it?
Unai Emery saving Spurs.
He'd probably turn them into worldies as well.
You know? He probably would.
Don't know, with Etienne Capoue and plenty of other players as well. Some from Spurs, Juan Foyth, yeah. I remember as well. But yeah, so Dejan, talk to me about Kulusevski, Sean. I know you've...
my
is he
favorite.
Your favourite now?
He's getting there. Son's number one for me. It's always been Son. But Kulusevski is just the... The leaps and bounds he's come on. We mentioned our co-worker, Jack, who's a Juventus fan. He was always adamant that there is a player in Kulusevski. He just kind of lacked the confidence to be able to do it. And I think Spurs fans, myself included, were very wrong after Kulusevski on his debut. He came on against Brighton in an FA Cup match and he looked so off the pace. He did not look strong. He did not look quick. He wasn't technically up to it. It wasn't clicking in his brain, and you just kind of look at him thinking, oh God, we've got one of Juve's proper rejects here. But since then, it's just a formidable player. You look at all the stats that come out over the weekend, you know, the only players to have contributed more goals in the Premier League since he's arrived is Kane and Son. That's just how good he is. That's the level he's at already. I'm quite scared now that he's become a bit mainstream. I liked it last season when people didn't really notice him.
Sean, are you telling me that Adrian Rabiot was going to be a worldie?
No, because Jack at least thought that Kulusevski and Bentancur might be okay. Jack's been quite adamant. This is a man who will always get any in his player ratings because he's that bad.
And Richarlison to come in as well. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Sean, wasn't it? Where, and that helps to pressure you, pressure them. And I just think it takes the pressure off Son and Kane, where you can, at times, you can give them a weekend off if you need to. And I think that's the key to this now, isn't it? You've got such, you need that right hand side. Imagine if you do get Zaniolo or Scott, it could be something special this season.
I know. Tipping Spurs for third at present, although Liverpool weren't great in the opening game. City look like a well-oiled machine, and they now have a goal scorer as well. You know, still very much the favourites, but Spurs may be taking a step up. But so are Chelsea. They play each other this weekend. Sunday's game, I believe. Chelsea still doing business or trying
to do... It's not Sunday's game, Scott. Sheffield United Middlesbrough is Sunday's game.
that's a big one for you and in your Middlesbrough shirt today.
Yorkshire Derby. Big Yorkshire Derby.
tell us about Chelsea, Graham. Wesley Fofana still on the agenda. A right wing back still on the agenda too. What's the latest on Fofana to start with?
Yeah, Fofana's progressing. You know, the player's starting to push us now a little bit. He did sign his new deal back in May. And you know, Brendan Rodgers is saying these players aren't for sale, but one may need to go. And we know they're well stocked in defence. So I think this does make sense. You know, if we get to 80, that's the magic figure here. And we've seen Chelsea do it with Cucurella. I don't understand why they won't do it here. They started at 60, they're at 70, we understand at the minute. There's only 10 million apart here. I can't see Todd Boehly letting this player go for the sake of 10 million. You know, one of the world's best young defenders. And since a frightening thought, I thought Chelsea looked okay at the back, but long term, I think Fofana is a special player. And no, I think this one should get done. That's what we're hearing. Fofana wants it to be done. If they get to 80 in some sort of deal, it does look like this is going to happen. And the clubs are talking, it's ongoing. And it's a bit expensive, but you know, when they got more of Harry Maguire, so that's the standard that has been set for that Fofana. You know, I don't think anyone thinks it's a stupid price for him. We know how good he is. We've seen the potential there. In terms of the wing back, Scott, yeah, we thought with Cesar's arrival that this would put this to bed, but no. Beloved Denzel Dumfries to talking to Inter. Kyle Walker-Peters was another on their list as well. Dumfries, who does have interest in United as well, Scott. I think it's a position that you, after weekend, know that does need strengthening. Inter, 40 million euros is the price on his head. And yeah, he's there to be had. So if United wanted more Chelsea, it does look like Chelsea are pushing, but where they're going to get to 40 remains to be seen. But he will be a high caliber backup to Reece James. And Chelsea, yeah, I think they got caught a bit short last year in defence, but I tell you what, they're making sure they're not going to be caught out this season if they do get injuries.
Yeah, of course, those players on Chelsea's list, they've also they're also interested in Frankie de Jong, as we know and have reported last week. Also other players we'll get to later in the show, Graham. Chelsea as well, we'll come back to that. But on the subject of right backs and right wing backs and Denzel Dumfries, obviously Man United's interest has been there as well. United trying to offload Aaron Wan-Bissaka, possibly likely to Crystal Palace at the moment. They signed him, of course, for 50 million. I thought that was one of the first deals we worked on together, Graham. Aaron Wan-Bissaka for 50 million from Palace to Man United a few years ago.
The good old days.
God.
you can tell an English player is bad when he doesn't even get a cap off Gareth Southgate. I think that is
a good measure. It's a very good measure.
Yeah. If you're in your mid-20s in the Premier League and you don't get a cap off Gareth Southgate, that's a bad sign.
Yep. It's definitely the case. We'll see what happens with Wan-Bissaka. It's been made pretty clear and obvious that Ten Hag is not too impressed by him. I don't think he has the ability on the ball to play in Ten Hag's team, but then which player does? Wait and see. Maybe Crystal Palace will end up taking him on loan with an option to buy for around £10 million or something like that. That's pure speculation.
We know they're in talks, Scott, and the fact that I didn't. I was looking at this, but when I saw Nathaniel Clyne starting for Palace, I think that's just ticks about. Yeah, they do need another run. Not a thing against Nathaniel Clyne, but he's in his the last few glimmers of his career in the Premier League, and he'll be good backup. But I think they do need the first choice, and what better place for Wan-Bissaka to go, really?
Yeah, we'll see how that one plays out. Also on United, links with Benjamin Sesko over the last few days. Turns out that he's going to RB Leipzig from RB Salzburg. Agent-driven, Graham, but there has been some interest there by the seams of it in United. But, you know, it seems now that Benjamin Sesko will join RB Leipzig for a relatively small fee in 2023 and will probably end up getting sold to Man United for £70 million in the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, he's going to have his first full season in Austria first. You know, let's see how he does. The agent played a cracking hand here, didn't he? He took photos at Newcastle Airport. He had some talks with Manchester United. What better way to frighten Leipzig? Oh, we might lose one of our best young players. Let's get him signed up. And hey, that's what agents are there to do. There was an interest. And, you know, I think if it had been a huge bid, they would have gone in. But yeah, I think, to be fair, I think once Newcastle and United had looked in the background, they knew he wasn't, at the moment, a £50 million player.
Interesting, Konrad Leimer as well going around today. We reported in May, Graham, that Ralf Rangnick had recommended Konrad Leimer to Man United. That's now circling around again, although he seems to be on the way to Bayern Munich in some capacity, whether that's this year or next.
It's this year, but that one turned to a right saga in Germany, where they've only been 5 million apart for the last 6 weeks. But Leipzig is standing firm, and Bayern, as we know, they think they can bully any club in Germany. And as it stands, he's not going. Which is, literally 5 million euros apart, and they haven't progressed in the last 6 weeks. Leimer was left out of Leipzig squad at the weekend, so from what I'm hearing, Jeremy, they think it will get done.
Let's move to Newcastle. We'll come to Brentford in a second, but Newcastle are in potentially for two signings, Bamba Dieng and Lucas Paqueta, Graham.
Yeah, although you should refer to them as United at the minute. So,
the best United in the league, yes.
Yes. Yeah, Newcastle, they've still got a little bit of work to do. The press conference after the Forest game, Eddie Howe did confirm he loves his squad, etc., but he wants more quality. And we've seen that in the attacking third. So we've seen James Maddison, Moussa Diaby, Jack Harrison. We know where they're looking. And so, yeah, they are looking at targets who they have looked at before. Bemba Dieng from Marseille. He's a bit like Sadio Mane. He can play anywhere across the front three. Scored 7 goals last year. Very impressive. And he's only available because he's either fallen out with Igor Tudor, the new coach, who has fallen out with quite a few players.
He got booed at the weekend, the manager, Tudor.
Because Sampaoli, who left, he was like a Bielsa figure, wasn't he? He was amazing. The fans loved him, players did. And so now, Marseille, who were going for Alexis Sanchez, amazingly, Bemba Dieng is available for £15 million. He could be one of the bargains of the summer. And that allows Newcastle then, if you do progress with him, so got other options. So yeah, Newcastle are in for Dieng. A lot of teams are though: Celtic, West Ham, Leeds, Everton. So Newcastle are in there. They like him, and they're are talking over this one. And the other player they're talking about in France as well, Scott, is Lucas Paqueta. A really, really good midfielder from Lyon. One of Bruno's best friends. He's been in the northeast. He's had his photo taken in Newcastle kit already. His fee has dropped to £33 million. Bruno Cheru confirmed over the weekend again that if the right bid comes in, he can go. So, yeah, Arsenal, the player Arsenal like a lot. And I think at £33 million, Arsenal, I wouldn't rule him out of this equation. But, you know, Lucas wants to go, play with Bruno. And, you know, these would be two ideal signs for Newcastle. They need that someone to unlock a defence. Like on Saturday, even though Newcastle played quite well, it took a 30-yarder from Fabian Schär to break the deadlock. Just on the hour. And so they don't have... Bruno is a box-to-box son. He's not really that man to unlock, but someone like Paqueta is. So keep an eye on these two. Newcastle like them. We're investigating both deals as we speak. And yeah, these two could end up on Tyneside.
Paqueta going into a midfield with Bruno Guimaraes and Joe Linton. That's quite a prospect, surely.
Joe Linton really is.
You love Joe Linton now.
I don't love... Joe, what? I love not to love him, Sean, but I gave him man of the match on Saturday through gritted teeth. He performed well. He's been sensible with his runs now. He's a real dynamic runner from midfield. And Newcastle
ability is a tackle as well, though, Graham. I watched the game as well. I noticed there was one moment where he was chasing backwards, slide tackle, hooked and hooked the ball away to win possession back too.
Yeah, that's why I like him. He's everything, like, for instance, David and Alan Sam Maximum isn't. He's putting that effort and he's really effective for Scott, isn't he? He's really effective in that centre midfield now. And John Joe Shelby as well. Let's note that he's just been ruled out for 3 months. So if they can get Paqueta, Bruno and Joe Linton, you know, the best three Brazilians in North East have seen since Emerson, Juninho and Branco, I think. So, Bruno was good. Newcastle need this, but they do need that forward. They do need that other forward. They really do. Wilson was great. He scored a wonderful goal, but Sam Maximan, Almiron, you know, they couldn't unlock Nottingham Forest. And that worries me. But Dien and Paqueta really add to that. So they're not done deals, but Newcastle do like him and they are progressing.
Speaking of, Sean, Mikael Damsgaard, a player that we've mentioned, on last week's show, still not official yet as we speak, but looks like Brentford are going to seal this deal for a promising prospect from Denmark, obviously, because obviously it's Brentford.
We spoke last week about it, that he came through a youth system at Nordjylland, where their head of youth at the time turned into the manager when he was coming through. He'd worked at Brentford before and knows Thomas Frank, so there's a lot of links around that. But another player to add to the kind of, I called it the aggregate, like from Moneyball, to help replace Christian Eriksen, that he has this kind of ingenuity, this spark. He's a very versatile player, and I think Tom Frank's going to like that because he's been experimenting with kind of different formations with players on the pitch. He likes to go with a 4-3-3, but he likes to sometimes put his forwards in wing-back areas and play with a three at the back as well. So he's going to come perfectly into that. I wouldn't rule out him scoring a free kick on his debut against Man United at this rate, but
I'm fully expecting. Oh,
But he was one of these stars of the Euroshine.
Scored a free kick against England.
Yeah, people are wondering where they've heard of him but can't quite remember. He was like he was literally the Eriksen replacement for Denmark. So what better player to get for Brentford?
Exactly, yeah. And I think Brentford have I'm not saying they silenced all the critics, but I think they took the criticism that they're going to be in trouble because they lost Eriksen personally. I know Frank was really kind of annoyed about it in his first press of the season. You know, he was like, Christian, great player. We wouldn't have gone down anyway. So I think bringing in another quality player in addition to what they have after completing a good comeback at Leicester really boosts what they've got.
Tony looks so much better, Sean. That first goal last season, that touch would have bounced off his knee, wouldn't it?
Great control. And he had a good chance soon after as well. Missed the header. Any other day he puts that in as well.
We mentioned Rico. How well did Rico Henry play this, Sean?
The cross for Tony for the goal. There you go.
I'll be looking forward to that against Man United on Saturday night.
Be worried, Scott. Be worried.
Yeah. Let's move on. We've got a few stories left to cover involving Wilf Zaha, who it seems... Well, Wilf Zaha has been linked with a move away from Crystal Palace for what seems like forever since he rejoined them. Obviously, he joined United earlier in his career. It did not work out, so he returned there. Linked with Arsenal plenty of times in the past, and now it's Chelsea who have a player in Callum Hudson-Odoi that seems to be on his way out. Could there be some kind of agreement between the two to switch them around, Graham?
Yeah, well, Hudson-Odoi obviously wants out. He wasn't even on the bench for Chelsea at the weekend, which... you know, it speaks volumes, really. He hasn't been in contention for a long time. And he does need a fresh start. I think if we go back to when he signed his contract, Bayern Munich trying to sign him, he was in the England squad. To think how far he has dropped is remarkable. You know, Hudson-Odoi should be one of the first names on Gareth Southgate's team sheet. And he's not even going to get in the squad. He's nowhere near. Hey, he might change. He might go to Palace, as we're now suggesting may happen, and relaunch his career. There's a lot of teams in for Hudson-Odoi. We've seen Newcastle, West Ham, Leeds, Everton, a lot of teams like him. But I think this move across to South London as a possible replacement for Zaha does fit. And we know from what we were reporting that Zaha is on Todd Burley's list. Let's not forget, Chelsea are looking for a right-hand side player. They tried for Rafinha, didn't get him. And they haven't really been linked after many in terms of that position again. We've seen Havertz play there. I'm not convinced by that. But Zaha, I think he could really slot into this Chelsea squad and have a major contribution. He's never played Champions League football. We know that's what he'd like to do, Scott, before he finishes his career. And there's not going to be many options out there. And Palace, he's only got a year left. Palace can sell him for good money. I think it suits all parties. And I think Zaha would be a terrific addition for Chelsea.
Yeah, of course. It always has been the problem for Zaha that he's kind of been priced out of moves. I know when Arsenal in the past have made approaches, the price has been a bit too big for them. But we'll see how this goes, because, I mean, it does seem to make a lot of sense for both teams. Conor Gallagher is also a Chelsea player who has a ton of clubs after him. Are Chelsea going to... Do you feel like Chelsea are going to let him go, or are we waiting and seeing here?
No, it doesn't appear so. We did a piece, West Ham, Newcastle, Palace, one of them. They're all basically keeping in touch with Chelsea, saying, look, what's the situation with Conor Gallagher? Please keep us informed. As any good club would do. You know, if he comes available, you want to know about it. You know, and that's where it stands. At the moment, Chelsea said no. He's not leaving. He started on the bench on Sunday. This is the thing with this window that we discussed. If Gallagher doesn't start a game from now to the end of the month, he may agitate for a move.
See how it goes. He's got plenty of options. He did really well at Palace last season. Sean, I'll move on to Fulham closing in on a transfer target in Justin Kluivert, by the sounds of it.
Very Fulham transfer target, it feels like. Very, very. This kind of player who was rated 2 or 3 years ago, hasn't kind of kicked on. Oh, I'll go to Fulham, rejuvenate my career. Maybe. I feel like I thought they were really impressive against Liverpool. And that has made me... I had them just about staying up this year, because I think there are ultimately three teams worse than them anyway. But it has made me think about, you know, what is the upside with Fulham? Can they be a team that scores a lot of goals but just kind of leaks them, you know, in the proper Marco Silva way? Justin Kluivert would kind of fit into that, I guess. You know, they do have a couple of players in his mould already. They brought in Andres Pereira, who I actually thought was quite good at the weekend as well. Mm. Manuel Solomon as well. But
he's picked up an injury, hasn't he, Sean Solomon?
Oh, has he? Okay.
Yeah, apparently he's picked up an injury from weekend, which was an interesting one. But yeah, Mitra was so good, wasn't he? But I think, taking place about Fulham, they won that game with Tim Ream at centre-half. They should get bonus points for that.
Technically didn't win.
Didn't win. But not to lose with Tim. When they came out with the Tete, who played really well.
That was the thing. Everyone was looking at the team sheet thinking, oh my God, this could be 5 or 6 for Liverpool. And it wasn't. Yeah. Fulham made it really tough. And it wasn't
arguably Fulham's best player. And he wasn't in the mix.
And I am talking myself into thinking, because Mitro... obviously he got the goals and he was really good, but there were times you could see how kind of slow and lumbering he was, in spite of how silly he made Van Dijk look at times.
Oh,
Henderson bump as well in midfield.
The 90 minutes office, as the listeners will, I will tell all the listeners, everyone bar me in the 90 minutes office hates Mitrovic.
I absolutely love him. I think he's brilliant. I just think you think he's scoring 25 goals this season, and I think we've seen it a few times before.
I certainly do now.
Have more doubts than you.
Yeah, I certainly do now. Yeah, I certainly think he's going to score 25. Now, I just think I was worried without Wilson Scott, without him providing the ammunition, I was worried. But Marco Silva's doing a cracking job. I was more worried by the fact that Stan still isn't open at Fulham. I've seen stadiums built in less time it's taken them to build that stand.
Yeah.
Although I did notice watching the game on TV, I think the camera is now... is it further away now? Is it up?
It's higher up, I think.
Looks better.
I don't like it.
One thing I always say about the game, why was the Thames so dirty? It was brown, wasn't it?
That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Oh, is it always like that?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was to do with the building, where the building and they're putting like badges or something in behind and doing something like that.
That's definitely the Thames. I'm not sure it's far away. So, let's round up the show today with some Wolves and Everton news. Juicy stuff here. Wolves signing a Valencia winger in Gonzalo Guedes, I believe. If I pronounced that wrong, let me know. But I've seen him plenty of times before. He's cost a lot of money. I've never really been too impressed with him, but Wolves have done another... they've signed another Portuguese forward for a lot of money. They've obviously let Fabio Silva leave for Anderlecht, I believe, earlier in the summer. But obviously, this player has a lot more experience at international level and has been playing in top leagues for a few years now. And they've let Connor Cody go to Everton on a season-long loan, I believe, with an option to buy. And there's other players in the mix as well. Sean or Graham, what can you tell us about Everton's latest business? Or do you have any comment to pass on Wolves' new signing? Sean?
Firstly, I was going to say, I'm the same boat as you, Scott. I've seen Guedes a lot, and not once has he impressed me. But Wolves really have a thin squad. It's stupidly thin. And I think just bringing in players with that kind of experience of playing at the top level who will fit in with his teammates, as we know, with how many Portuguese players they have there, I think that's important for them. So I get why they did it, especially with Jimenez being out as well. So they just need goals from somewhere. And it's a decent signing. With Cody, felt a bit weird, but...
Jamie Carragher called him a traitor on Instagram. As a joke.
Wasn't Jamie Carragher an Everton fan growing up?
He's on the reverse Carragher.
Graham, your thoughts on Everton's business and Wolves' business?
Interesting, yeah. It'll be interesting what it does for Cody's England aspirations. You know, he's the cheerleader in the squad, and Southgate obviously picks him for that on that basis. I think it's good for Max Kilman, another one of my favourite players. He'll get a run at it. Disappointing performance on Saturday at the weekend, the way that Wolves just they worked so hard to go up and then they let it go against Leeds, even though they were the better team. It's a strange one. They need a striker, and we'll see whether they are trying to get Batshuayi still from Chelsea, so we'll see where they go with Jimenez injured. And they still got hold of your favourite Traore, holding on to him, Sean, but that might be Spurs' tactic to get him for cheap. So Wolves are a fascinating team, aren't they? You can make a case for them for being top eight, bottom eight. It's a really strange one, but they know the Portuguese market, don't they? And they do it well, but letting Cody go, they've been good to him. Obviously, they could have kept him on the bench, but he's got Everton. Does he improve Everton massively? Obviously, they lost Ben Godfrey at the weekend. He will help, but I think he's swapping a top eight battle for a bottom eight battle, that's for sure.
Graham, for next week's show, can you come loaded with your favourite 11? So we already know that Max Kilman is one. Phil Foden, you've already mentioned Marco Verratti as well. Can you put an 11 together? Just
I think Mitro will be the striker.
Mitro, probably.
Yeah. Isaiah Jones at right back. Yeah. A few Borough players in there, if you allow me. But I'm sorry. Yeah, Verratti. Ruben Neves, I do like talking Wolves and players who United should sign. Why? That is one thing of this window, Scott. It's like all these players, Rabiot and stuff. Just go and sign Ruben Neves. What are you doing? Like,
are we sure United aren't a week away from entering the Adama sweepstakes? Can we rule it out?
I don't think we can. Do you know what? I think they're one or two teams who've never looked at him, to be honest. But I still think Sergino Dest is one to keep an eye on for that, guys, because Barcelona, Xavi wants to keep every single player. I don't think he's even admitted wanting rid of Martin Braithwaite yet. He wants every player to stay. So I'd keep an eye on Sergino Dest. I really would. I think he still could be on his way out of Barcelona, because this week, I think it's next week, isn't it? They have to really get these players registered for La Liga. So it could be an extraordinary week ahead, even by Barcelona standards.
I'm really looking forward to it. Thanks, guys, for this week's edition of Talking Transfers. There's going to be plenty more chat over the course of the next few days in the lead up to next week's show. Obviously, there's plenty to look on. United's crazy activity. Manchester United's crazy activity, as now Newcastle are top of the United stakes. We'll see what else happens over the next few days. So keep an eye on 90min.com and all of our Twitter pages @_ScottSaunders, @GrahamBailey, and @SeanDZWalsh. We'll have the latest if we get it. You can also follow everyone else from the 90 Min team. You can find them on our profile somewhere. But yes, come back to 90min.com for all of the latest. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. And please subscribe. Apple, Google, Spotify, all the likes. You can find Talking Transfers there. So thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch you soon.